to show success.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Big shout out to our listeners also in the Tron, Hamilton, the city of the future, the city of Agenda 21. And I was just speaking with Jeffrey, our fabulous little station manager down in Rudgee FM. He's working for Greenpeace, right? I said, oh, bro, you know, you can't work for those scum. You know? Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, he understands what they're all about, and he does door knocking for them, right? And guess what he does after when he's doing the door knocking? He's actually looking for truthers. He's met up with a whole bunch of people, like Free Man Movement people and, you know, Zeitgeist people and you know, all over the place. It's really, really interesting how you can actually use the weapons of the enemy against them. Speaking of the enemy, Obama to run for president in 2012. Oh, the prophecy of doom day. U.S. President Barack H. O'Barry has planned to run for a second term in office in the 2012 presidential election, despite his low popularity ratings, a U.S. official says. I'm not sure if he even has any popularity ratings at all. I mean, you know, that's just mincing words there. This is what he says. Oh God, this is classic. We've made some progress on getting our economy back in order, and I think the president wants to continue to do that. AFP quoted White House spokesman Robert Gibbs as saying on Friday, got the frickin' economy back in order? Back in New World Order, more like it. Gibbs also added that President Barack H. O'Barry planned to file official candidacy papers in the coming months. I mean, yeah, isn't one term of a liar who can't do anything that ain't read off a teleprompter enough for you people? I mean, come on. What the hell is going on here? We go absolutely friggin' bonkers. Now, according to Gallup figures, which are, of course, pretty contrived, O'Barry's approval rating stood at 45% in November, down from almost 65% during his first days in office in 2009. So he probably hopes some description of enormous false flag terrorism event to save his presidency. In my opinion, of course, probably won't be that way. It'll probably be like, well, he'll just get funded twice as much by the bankers as they'll fund his what do they call them now? Opponents. Yeah, right. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's a puppet show, kind of like politics. Poly meaning many, ticks meaning blood sucking insects. We'll be right back. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, proudly brought to you in conjunction with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We've got a very special guest for you today. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who listen to AFR on a regular basis, you'll be very well familiar with him. It's James Burns from Freedom Files. Jamesy, Burnsy, whatever the heck I'm calling you now, welcome back.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, you know, pretty awesome, bro. Always, always. Hey, what did you talk about on your show today, man? I'm sorry, I didn't get to catch it.
Oh, well, yeah. Different time zones, I suppose. the same old we talked about. Let's see, let me look over my headlines. That was 2 hours ago, Vinny. we talked about that bombing in Russia. You know, 35 people have been killed, 150 wounded. We talked about the Patriot Act being up for renewal. What the 2012 presidential election is going to look like, or selection, as they call it. Yeah, basically that stuff.
So, James, I want to ask you something. You have a show called Freedom Files, right?
Yes.
So how do we define freedom? Because there seems to be a problem out there whereby we have all these people that come from different perspectives, whether they're on the traditional right or left, somewhere in between, in the new left or in the new right, as it's called. I mean, but essentially everyone wants freedom, we hope, except for the real scumbags. Mm-hmm. How do we define this? How do you define freedom? That's what I want to know.
The way I've always defined, well, not always. I mean, back whenever I was a, you know, stool pigeon Republican when I was a kid 10 years ago, I'd probably saw it differently than I do now, is that in order to have true freedom and liberty, you have to allow everybody to have freedom and liberty. You can't say, okay, I'm all about freedom, but I'm against gay marriage or abortion or, you know, Muslims. You have to give everybody the same ground. You have to give everybody freedom and liberties and individual rights and respect, or it's just a bunch of BS that you're spewing out if you're talking about freedom while at the same time going and bombing other countries in unconstitutional wars.
Is freedom based upon any sort of moral code? Because thousands of years of human interaction would tell us that, hey, there needs to be a moral code of some sort.
I don't know. That's a good question, Will. I don't know if it's a moral code or if it's some sort of essence that is, I don't know, programmed into us through some sort of higher being. I mean, I'm more of a spiritual guy. I'm not necessarily religious. I believe that everybody has the right and the freedom to believe whatever they want as long as they're not hurting anyone else. The truth is, I really don't know. I mean, it's one of those questions that we have about our existence, who we are, what we're supposed to be, where do we come from, what's on the other side. I mean, it goes into that category, in my opinion.
I mean, I've got the distinct feeling that we can't ever have a true society, a true libertarian or free society, unless people can agree on some groundwork. And I think that's the problem. I think that's the underlying problem, is that when it comes to the big questions in life, it's not just that a lot of people can't agree. A lot of people won't even want to go there.
Yeah.
Mentally. And so then bears the question is, if they can't push the bounds of reality within their minds, are they responsible enough to be given freedom? This is the age-old argument, isn't it? With freedom comes responsibilities.
And so I kind of take issue with that. I mean, you say the term given freedom. It's never given, is it? You know, you have to take it.
Yeah, you have to fight for it.
You know, and this is what people don't really understand in these modern days. They think that their freedoms will just be protected and that they don't have to, you know, go out and do protesting or advocate their government or anything along those lines, that everything's just going to be frickin' hunky-dory, you know?
Well,
and
as
it's
far
not,
as I'm
and
saying,
and it never has been.
As far as I'm concerned, everyone is born with innate freedoms, with inalienable freedoms. Everyone is empowered with freedoms as in the same way their heart beats, you know. It's just an innate thing. It's just wherever – you can say it comes from God. You can say it comes from whatever. But please don't say it comes from the government, you know, because because then I'll have an issue with you. And that's why I have an issue with – you know, I like to harp on about them, but I just generally call them the left, people who think that having a middleman works. people that think that going to a used car salesman is better than buying privately. That is the sort of, these are the people. They think we need used car salesmen overseeing every interaction of human activity, and they call that good government.
I love it when Will rags on leftists.
I'm not even ragging on leftists. There's a lot of fake Christian conservative idiots out there who think George Bush is just this pious man. And I mean, there are a lot of, there's idiocy on all sides. But I generally call them just, I don't know, big government leftists. That's my, I don't know what else we call them. People even think government makes the grass grow or sunshine. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I used to have that point of view about liberals in general, but at the same time, you have to realize that it's not just liberals that are responsible. I mean, you look at a lot of the neocons, especially in my own country alone, with they're going up for the 2012 election. You have Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich out there, Huckabee. All of them are neocons. I mean, they support big government. They support, you know, police state laws and
Exactly my point. It's all these fake conservatives, all these fake Christians that they use that to grab the votes down south and, you know, whatever they are. They claim to be conservatives. They claim to be libertarians. They claim to be, you know, for reducing government and taxation. But at the end of the day, their whole livelihood depends on the assistance of such and the growth of such. And they work for the same bank and masters, and so they have to expand the size of government. They have to grow government, they have to grow debt. Otherwise, they end up in a box somewhere like JFK. But my point is, like, the core of people's beliefs has to change, I think, in order for us to get away from this whole mantra, right?
I think what has to happen is people have to learn to respect and accept other people's beliefs. I don't think that people have to have us, you know, Whatever you decide to do personally in your life is your own business, in my opinion. Whether it's going from being a Christian to an atheist, or believing in something else, or becoming, you know, sexuality, or the choice of, you know, using marijuana, all these things come down to individual freedom, and that's what you have to get to. People respecting each other's rights and freedoms, and leaving others the hell alone.
But naturally, because we live in a cohesive world, there's going to be some overlap between people's lives, and there is a possibility that, you know, one dope grower might interfere with someone else who's staunchly against it. I mean, there's always going to be these interactions and disagreements, right?
I love it how they kind of focus on these small, isolated incidents as like these, these cascades, as if they're all caused by some wider problem, that kind of thing. Like a single gunman shoots a congresswoman, all of a sudden, both the right and the left are all demons.
Well, they have to.
Why the heck don't they blame the gunman?
Yeah.
Well, because they have to use it as an opportunity. They have to use it to try and consolidate their own power and compete against one another. Yeah. But I'm saying, regardless of government, there's always going to be problems. There's always going to be problems due to our diversity.
Exactly.
That's no reason not to have diversity. Of course not. That's the reason, like James says, to respect one another. But say, if you take one of these fake fights about the term marriage, yeah, and whether gay people can be married or not, then if in a libertarian society, as I see it, with limited to no government, that term, that definition, the classification wouldn't even exist. Because they're asking the government to change the definition of the word marriage in order to allow them to have the same rights, supposedly, whatever that means. But in a libertarian society, when you reduce the size of government, government shouldn't have any say on people being, you know, united for the rest of their lives anyway. But you see, those gay rights activists, in a sense, are big government supporters. See, they want the government to define a holy union or whatever it is they want. And this is, I think, our sickness, is people are addicted to government.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Will. They're going to the government to try and get a wrong undone. I mean, that's the problem here. I mean, they shouldn't be going that route. They should be saying, well, you know what? Does it really matter if? I mean, look how marriages are. Most marriages, like they say, I saw a statistic where best case scenario, 50% of marriages end up in divorce. Okay, and there's plenty of people out there that our life partners. It's not just a homosexual community. It's also plenty of men and women do this as well. And they live happy lives. You no longer need to get married in order to have sex. And that was one of the original reasons why the church had marriage in the first place, because they didn't have protection, safe sex. You know, that was non-existent back in the day. And it was another form of control by the government. And back then, it was, i.e., the church that was in charge. And it's just another form of control. That's all marriage is.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. All the people who look for the government to solve all their problems, it's like a crackhead going to his dealer trying to score more rock.
marriage is a traditional term loaded with Judeo-Christian ethics, supposedly. And then for people who don't believe in it, I don't know why they'd want to be married. I mean, I don't understand it. Because under the law, say in New Zealand here, if I have a girlfriend here for 24 months, legally it goes 50-50 if we break up. Legally, yeah. We're protected just the same way that a married couple would be. And so I don't understand this whole fake debate whatsoever. I think it's one of the most ridiculous arguments supposedly relating to civil liberties I've ever heard of. Meanwhile, everyone's rights are being destroyed with documents like the Patriot Act.
Which is up for renewal, and it's probably going to be renewed because nobody knows what the heck is in the Patriot Act, least of all the frigging Congress who passed it.
But celebrities and like Ellen DeGeneres and all these people will bring attention and march on the streets on this non-issue, a single word called marriage, when they can live their lives any way they want, really, as much as the rest of us can anyway. But then on the subject of the Patriot Act, they'll shut up and just, listen to their government and follow orders.
Yeah,
that discredits their message. Just discredits their form of activism.
Yeah, but at the same time, I understand and I respect the gay community's right and desire to have the ability to go before a court of law and get married. Even though I think that really doesn't make any difference. But on the other side of the spectrum, you look at the Holy Rollers, the conservative Christians. They make this such a big issue, the whole gay marriage issue, while it's a distraction, it's smoke and mirrors compared to the police state we live in, the unconstitutional wars, our currency being under the control of the Federal Reserve, just an unemployment skyrocketing. I mean, these issues are more important, in my opinion, than whether or not gays should be allowed to marry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watched a documentary called Jesus Camp, and I mean, it had this big, huge woman leading around a congregation of probably about 150 children. And, I mean, she had, like, spell-like control over these people, this big booming voice. And she pulled up at one point in this documentary, she pulls up a placard, a life-size placard of George W. Bush, and gets them to, like, put their hands on this image of Bush and praise him and power to him because he's a Christian man. Because Bush is espoused many times as a Christian man. She says it's totally evident. I mean, has she heard of Bohemian Grove? I mean, has she heard of Skull and Bones? I mean, has she heard of the Knights of Malta? I mean, what sort of – I mean, this is the idiocy, though. And then Sarah Palin and yada, yada, yada. And then they get behind these people, and it's just like sheep to the slaughter.
Yeah. I know they just they're the problem is they're brainwashed. They're a bunch of Kool-Aid drinkers who believe W was a great president and believe that Obama is the evilest president we ever had. Yet they fail to tie anything between the two. The fact that all that Obama has done is picked up the ball and carried it down the field, just like Bush had, and just like Clinton did before, and Papa Bush.
Hey, I mean,
they just can't connect the dots.
That gives me up to a very interesting analogy, isn't it? The presidential race is like a football team or a rugby team for the New Zealanders listening. It's basically like this. You look at the person who's got the ball, and then as soon as he passes the ball to somebody else, you think that the person you think that the game's over? It's like, no, another person's got the ball, and he's still running. You've got to protect your goalposts.
It's the same team.
Yeah. The funny thing is, though, with this documentary, is I found truth mixed into the idiocy to the extent that this woman was trying to warn the children of subliminal images on TV and sort of mainstream manipulation in general and getting people to question things like global warming, which I saw as positive on one hand, But then you have this overlay of just fake government's good, Romans 13, Titus, and all the rest of it. And so it's a whole – I can easily see how – I mean, in the States, it's probably more evident than in New Zealand, but this whole Democratic, Republican, two-party, polarized debate is so dangerous.
Yeah, and chances are that was done by design in that documentary to make anybody that believes in global warming that, you know, has a debate with someone like us who are skeptical of global warming, who know the truth, that it is a fraud, that it's a Al Gore scam to, you know, make billions, if not trillions of dollars off of us and usher in a one world government. They'll lump us in with the nut job Jesus camp types.
Well, exactly. This is what they did because they had it cutting back to this leftist news talk. Sort of, I don't know, talk show host like us, I suppose. I can't remember the guy's name. And he was saying, oh, you know, these Christians want to question global warming because then it means they can go and wreck the planet before the second coming of Christ. And then he deducted his own loony theory as to why all people who question global warming are psycho-evangelical Bush supporters who want to go and wreck the planet in general. He just likened the anti-global warming argument to people who want to throw wrappers everywhere, and you know, when it's not the same debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the difficulty that I find with the debates, right, is that the people who are brainwashed don't have them at all, full stop. You start talking about anything to do with world government or anything to do with global warming being a fraud, anything to do with the banking system having undue influence over our governmental structure, and they go, oh, you're just talking about black helicopters. I'm not going to talk to you because I don't agree, and therefore you're wrong. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our special guest is James Burns, and we'll be right back.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can cruise in there, check out our fabulous archive sections where we have both 2010 and 2011 shows that we have done, as well as our very special section for Kiwi collaborators, full of a whole bunch of Kiwi activists that you probably never heard of but would definitely want to hear from again, as well as our appearances on other shows, including my favorite, when me and Will came on James Burns' show. I think that was probably the funniest show we've ever done, eh, Burnsy?
Yeah. That show wasn't too shabby. It was it was different. I was still doing, 3 days a week, and you guys were up a lot earlier in the day.
Oh, we were up like, what were we starting at, Will? We were starting at like 4 a.m. or was it 6 a.m. or something like that.
Y'all's time.
Oh yeah, it was just atrocious, eh? But now our show starts midday local time, so it's like, oh, thank goodness. Because seriously, man, if our schedule had not been changed, I would have had some description of breakdown. and not in the, you know, just pop up the hood and tinker a bit, then you'll be away laughing kind of breakdown. I'm talking about explosion in the gas tank kind of breakdown. Yeah, but still, it's always good to have a little bit of fun, especially when we're talking about the topics we do, man, because for F's sake, some of it's real uber serious, like Barack H. O'Berry taking over the... taken the helm, illegitimately, of course. It's just so bad, man. And of recent news, there was Lindsay Williams as well, who's predicted massive oil price rises before, and has proven to be correct every time. And they had somebody say, oh, Lindsay Williams, he's not a credible source. It's like, name me one other person that said that the oil prices were going to go from $150 to $40 a barrel and actually have it come true in the exact same time frame that he set out. You know, seriously, people don't know what's going on. And now he's saying that oil's going to be $200 a barrel by the end of 2011. Uh-oh. And an article in here on guerrillamedia.co.nz from the UK, petrol rationing program proposed by MPs as prices hit to set £8 a gallon by the summer. Who would have thunk it? That's not a coincidence at all, is it? And, you know, the whole oil industry is one big, huge scam. Let's face facts here. We all rely heavily on the oil industry. Every bit of equipment that we're using right now to do this radio show is made in no small part through the use of oil. All right, period. Everything's made out of it. And it would be nice, perhaps, if there was some description of ethics going on here with regards to oil. But no, artificial scarcity seems to be the order of the day. And PR seems to be the main objective for companies such as BP, who basically denying, deceiving, and delaying the cleanup of the Gulf as the residents are now on their knees, begging for them to do something, right? They shouldn't have to beg. BP is liable. In my opinion, what should have been done the moment that the Deepwater Horizon exploded, is that the US government should have nationalized them, because there's no freaking way that the amount of money to be spent cleaning up that oil spill is going to be less than what the entirety of BP's assets and future business practices are worth. No possibility. Imagine all the damage that's been done to all the fisheries. Those people's livelihoods for goodness knows how long. Generations even. The Exxon Valdez destroyed the local fisheries and all of that kind of stuff. And it's still dead. Still. And that happened ages ago. And it was a paltry amount of oil that went into the environment by comparison. And so what's happening here is we're starting to see really what's going on behind the scenes. These people don't really deserve to have their environment destroyed. They never deserved it in the first place, of course. BP shouldn't have been drilling out that deep anyway. There's no point. There's plenty of oil reserves in the continental US, which you can tap very, very easily. But no, we've got to keep this whole artificial scarcity fear-mongering going so that we can push through our world government and then make everybody think that oil is a very, very, very finite resource when there's more oil than anybody could ever shake a stick at. You know, if you want a $20 million a month oil contract, we'll call up Gordon Duff and get it signed tomorrow, mate. There's tons of the stuff everywhere. And yet, when I go to fill my car up, you know, in New Zealand, $2 a litre is huge. It's like $8 a gallon. It's unbelievable. And we can't see any real reason for it. And when the oil prices drop, the petrol prices don't. When the oil
New Zealand dollar strengthens against the US too. Notice it doesn't get adjusted here. I watch it. We're at like 77 cents at the moment, 76.3 cents. It doesn't drop at the pump.
Yeah.
And it's like fluctuation the other way, and it goes up, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like whenever the price of oil goes up, we bear the full brunt of it. But whenever the price of oil goes down, we don't get anything. We don't get any reductions, nothing.
And there's no watchdog for local prices of gas around. Well, there's no one you can go to in New Zealand, really, to get an independent watchdog analysis undertaken.
And all the petrol companies are just acting like a freaking cartel, you know? What the heck's it going to do to all of our commerce?
People say, oh, look, it's so much more expensive in Europe. Well, relative to their incomes in Europe, average income per capita, it's actually a bit cheaper than here in New Zealand. It's obviously cheaper in the States, but in the States, they, you know, as you know, James, larger vehicles, larger engines, greater distances traveled. So, you know, in New Zealand, the gas price is constituted 47% by tax. 47% goes to the government, some form of tax.
Was that before or after they passed the emissions trading scheme, well, which added an extra 5 cents a litre?
That is after the 3 cents a litre added by the ETS. It's a total of 47% as it stands.
Well, they only added 3 cents a litre? I thought it was five.
It's 3 cents a litre.
Oh, great. They gave me a tax cut. Isn't that nice? That's what it's like in New Zealand. No, seriously, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't believe me, come down here. Try and find a job that doesn't tax you most of your wages. You know, for goodness sake. And even if it doesn't tax you most of your wages, let's say you're doing, 20% tax or something like that, you then have to pay an extra, 15% tax on everything else with goods and services. Every single thing that you buy has an extra 15% tax on it. Plus, on top of that, every time you fill up your car, 47% tax on it. Plus, there's, you know, goodness knows how much higher that's going to go, because this is only the first round of emission trading scheme carbon tax increases. This is the first round. Who's going to fire the final shot here? You know, how bad does it have to get before people stand up and say, excuse me, I'm not keen on paying so much extra tax. Government, please, please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, F off. You know, for goodness sake, it just drives me friggin' nuts. Well, in fact, it doesn't drive me friggin' nuts because I can't afford to drive anywhere at the moment, but... Oh, it's a tragedy. And I'm sure that the situation is not entirely different in the States, is it, James?
I think things are heading towards the same levels as New Zealand here in the States. I mean, I've been hearing talk for a while now about the need for a gas tax, and you have several states that are in such dire straits here in this country. A lot of them are in bankruptcy, basically, or in the red, deep in the red, where they're taking away people's pensions. They're leasing government buildings to try and make money. They're coming up with all sorts of new taxes and schemes, trying to basically bleed the American people dry. So it's only a matter of time before they add, say, a value-added tax or an entirely new tax system on the American people. That's going to make it, you know, probably just as bad, if not worse, than what you guys have to put up with in New Zealand.
And you know, whoever thought, realistically, of course, that taxation is a solution for anything. Anything. You know, I can't for the life of me recall any time where taxation has actually solved any description of problem. Can you, I mean, has somebody out there got any examples of this, you know? Please email us, producer@thevinnyeastwoodshow. It'd be breaking frickin' news. Taxes actually solve a problem.
Well, pragmatically, Vinny, they do. Pragmatically, these people. So we go back to this, James, we've got this big leftist stooge here in New Zealand who happens to be one of the biggest guys in alternative media. Now he's just joined with, now he's government funded, but we'll call him alternative media for argument's sake. And his name is Martin Bomber Bradbury. And he's one of these big tax grabbers. He would argue, Vinny, well, of course, without taxation, how could we pay for our great health system? How could we pay for our education system? Oh, you've got a problem with brainwashing children? Oh, you're weird. You can't have a problem with mainstream education. You can't have a problem with state health. It works perfectly. Injecting every under 16-year-old girl with free Gardasil is perfect. We couldn't do that without tax revenue. We couldn't give money to people who don't want to work forever. I mean, like, so it goes on, Vinny. Pragmatically, it solves a lot of problems. Dogmatically, it solves nothing and creates huge, you know, huh?
Mm-mm-mm.
But these aren't people of dogma. They call you fundamentalist if you want to bring in any dogma into a debate, any actual principle facts, operating principles of the universe, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and again, this is probably one of the worst things about society, you know, and I said it before and I'll say it again. If you're not prepared to debate things, you're not going to get anywhere, right? People turn away from debate. No. You should do the direct opposite. You should go into it. Every single time you see a debate taking place, wade in there. Okay? Don't worry about getting your feet wet or anything. Jump in that frickin' pool. Sink or swim. You know? Because the consequences of walking away from debates are far-reaching. Very far-reaching. Because the implication of not listening to other people usually leads to some description of conflict, like a war. And who's that good for? Other than the arms industry and the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. Nobody! Because if you're the one fighting, you're just as likely to get... In fact, you're less likely to get killed than the other people that you're fighting, especially if it's, say, US versus Iraq, where you've got 1 million dead Iraqis, and what do we got now, like 10,000 dead US troops, something along those lines? You know, none of those deaths are justified. None of them. Least of all the US troops, least of all the Iraqis. Doesn't matter. If you can't talk to people, if you can't communicate, then conflict is the only way, right? So anybody who refuses to debate anything, as far as I'm concerned, is some description of intellectual warmonger.
Yeah.
That sounds about right to me. If you don't want to talk about something, it means you want to fight about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because what you can't serve verbally is always going to turn physical. And so we need to have these debates out in the open, like I've always said. Evolution versus creationism should be debated on TV, should be debated around dinner tables, every night, every household. I mean, these are natural human things we should be able to talk about instead of people throwing insults everywhere. I mean, 9/11 should be debated. Climate change should be debated. Fractional banking should be debated. All these things should be debated. Instead, we have a society where everyone's just like, you know, Lady Gaga versus Britney Spears. Whose boobs are bigger than whose? I don't know. Who's got the toughest rugby team? I don't know. Just nonsense. And so because it's lowest common denominator, if you don't go along with that, you're not in their hip crowd, and you're one of these weirdos getting agitated like me on the radio over real issues.
Yep. Oh, no. Will, you're just a dogmatic crazy person, bro. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest is James Burns joining us for the duration of this hour, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Oh, yeah. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Also proud to be broadcasting on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, the city of the future, the city of Agenda 21. Welcome back.
Now, so we were talking
about a new form of government that we've already got, apparently. It's called mediocrity, where everybody's basically succumbed to the lowest common denominator. And anybody who basically pokes their head up about this, hold on, everybody's retarded. Then they go, oh, you're evil. You think we're all retarded? You're evil. Oh, hold on a second, mate. You just proved my point. You're freaking retarded. Shush. You know? Your debate shouldn't be allowed. Or maybe it should be. And then everybody would just look at you and just go, man, that guy's friggin' retarded. Wouldn't that be great if in general everybody was, I don't know, I wouldn't say educated, because that's kind of a bad word now, isn't it? You don't get educated in order to think. And I had this debate with some in fact, it wasn't a debate. It was very much an agreeable conversation with a university student friend of mine. She was trying to read this new manual, and she's like, what the heck are they saying? And I say, well, you know, it's just really convoluted, isn't it? And they're not trying to teach you how to think at all. They're just trying
to follow orders. That's what it's
about. Yeah, that's right. They're trying to tell you how they want you to think. They don't want you to think for yourself. Well, of course not. Thinking for yourself is dangerous.
Define they, Vinny. but James, what do you think we need to do, James, to get away from this, I don't know, fat kid at the chocolate store style addiction to government?
I don't know.
Just hook it to my veins.
Be honest, you know, you have so many people that are dependent on this, on these governments, and they do it by design, obviously. I mean, through welfare and unemployment and all these other bones that they throw out to the and scraps they throw out to the people, while they get the nice prime ribs and T-bone steaks. I don't know. I mean, because they do it intentionally, because they know if they give you a little bit, it'll keep you docile and happy and keep the populace from taking to the streets. And that's one of the main reasons why you haven't seen massive protests in the United States as of yet.
Well, maybe it's because they're really, really good at brainwashing everybody and chemically dumbing them down so that they don't know that there's a reason to protest.
That's a possibility, too.
I mean, how many guys have you guys seen this also? How many profiles have you seen of people where, when it comes to politics or religion, but mainly politics, they say, don't care, not interested?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I must have seen that hundreds of times.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of online dating sites, it's one of the things that they did a survey. The one thing that people don't really look for is the one thing they wish to avoid is politics. Oh, that's one thing I don't wish to talk about. I don't want to talk about politics because it may upset the person I'm going on a date with. You know, but I mean, what's the point if you don't have it all out in the open, if you're not open and honest with someone you're going on a date with in this interview? What's the point? Because sooner or later, it's all going to come out anyways.
To see, people have been trained not to talk, you know, talk their innermost feelings most openly. You know what I mean? We've been trained to shut up and let the social engineers run everything.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got people in this country, and I'm pretty sure these kind of people are everywhere. They don't want to be straight up. Whenever they're confronted with any type of even moderately difficult situation where they think, oh, this person may judge me or something along those lines, they dodge the questions or they parlay it or something like that. It's almost as if there's no value anymore in being honest and straight up with people. In fact, my girlfriend told us the other day, well, didn't she, that there's now billboards up in Auckland advertising a dating site for people that are married.
What?
Yes. You know, don't work on your marriage.
Adultery.com. Adultery.co.nz.
Adultery.co.nz.
Where everyone loses their morality.
Become a member. It's a social networking site.
Jeez.
That's just so sick, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, I know.
It's like, how many children do you have, honey? Yeah, no, it's just really gross.
Divorce book.
Boy, government scum getting into your life book.
Yeah,
spy on everything you do book.
It's we feel like we're beating our heads against the wall, but we're really not. And that's what people need to realize, is that everyone's like, well, you can't do anything about it anyway, so just pay the fine, just go along, just drink the water all the time. I've got a mound of traffic fines here if the government wants to know. I'm not freaking paying you, scum. I've been telling you that for years. You know what I mean? You made it up out of thin air. When you stop making money up, I'll start paying you, okay?
That sounds about right. You know, it actually sounds really logical that you wouldn't pay fraudsters something. And that's all that parking tickets really are, is a big frickin' fraud. You know, there's nothing under uniform commercial code about private vehicles being ticketed or something. It's all commercial vehicles. And I don't know about you, Will, but my vehicle is not owned by any company. So by law, by lawful reason, nobody can give me a friggin' ticket for parking somewhere.
I just picked up over the mailbox before and I got like a $200 fine because I accidentally parked down the road and my WAF, Warrant of Fitness, had expired by a day. But yeah, we have an open society without fiat currencies where we can earn an honest living, and I'll pay you the money, okay, Scum? Get your way. And then you can give that money to the kids and buy some propagandist books written by, I don't know, Huxley or someone.
Oh yeah, thanks very much, James, for joining us today, and you have yourself a wonderful rest of your day, bro.
Alright, you guys too, have a good one.
Alright, there he goes, Burnsy, ladies and gentlemen, on freedomfiles.com. We'll be back next segment in the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will at the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. Gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses. To the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen, to the information that you probably won't get on any, in fact, let me scratch that, you definitely won't get on any other radio show in New Zealand. And thank you very much also to Rush FM in Hamilton for rebroadcasting our show because, for F's sake. It's just friggin' awesome of you guys. Welcome back. We have a very special guest on the line for you today, ladies and gentlemen. These days, in my opinion, youth seem to be getting left out of the political process and just talking about, you know, random stuff, you know, partying, getting drunk, stuff like that, you know, student issues. But we have on the line New Zealand's youngest MP. His name is Gareth Hughes from the Green Party, and he joins us now live from Wellington. Gareth, are you there?
I am. Kia ora.
Kia ora, mate. How are you going today?
Oh, great. Beautiful day in Wellington.
Well, must be a rarity. I was going to ask you, we've got just a short segment here. I was wondering if you might sort of introduce yourself and explain how you got into be elected as the youngest member of Parliament.
Yeah, cool. Well, I still pinch myself some days that I'm actually in that debating chamber as well. I've been an activist. That's been my background. I used to work for Greenpeace and different environmental groups and ended up getting involved with the Green Party politically, and was on the list and just missed out at the last election. But when Jeanette Fitzsimons retired about 10 months ago, I followed her on the list. So that's how I made it into Parliament. All of our Green MPs are list MPs, and that's why at election time it's so important. Well, the only vote that really matters is the party vote.
Well, that's the interesting thing about our political system against, say, that of our counterparts in the United States, where there's not just two parties, there's a whole bunch of different ones. So, you know, at the very least, you do get some sort of differences locked up within Parliament itself, a lot of variation by comparison, at least. You know, but some people are saying that the parties are sort of becoming a bit more centrist of late, and they're all sort of... I don't know. They're all paddling in the same canoe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've just been in the States recently, and people were kind of amazed when I said I was a Green MP that we even had Greens in our Parliament. You know, it was only last year that the UK got its first Green in Parliament. Australia's only had their first Green in their Parliament in last year's election. So it's quite rare, and it's because we've got this fair proportional electoral system, MMP, that we can. Hey, I'm not sure whether Parliament or politics in New Zealand is becoming more mainstream. I think definitely from the left, for the National Party, and from the right, the Labour Party, was the other way around, but they're both pretty right-wing, to be honest. I mean, I challenge that.
And we will continue this just after the break. Our very special guest from the Green Party in Wellington is Gareth Hughes, ladies and gentlemen. You can check him up on Facebook. We'll be right back in just a few moments.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah,
but I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know? Like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any, not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, proudly broadcasting on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton in joint collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Our very special guest joining us for this hour as our part of our Kiwi Collaborator segment is Gareth Hughes, the youngest MP in Parliament. Gareth, welcome back.
Kia ora.
All right. Hey, now, I wanted to talk about this. Now, Jeanette Fitzsimons leaving the Green Party, I mean, how did that all come about? She'd been in activism and politics for a very, very long time, and what was her project going to be after leaving Parliament? Was it just enjoying a nice retirement?
Oh, I wish, because she's got such a beautiful piece of land up in the Coromandel. I wish we'd spent more time, but since she's left Parliament, she's still been mad busy. Her big project is trying to stop the lignite mining on the South Island down near Invercargill. We've got fantastic amounts of lignite coal. It's the dirtiest, least energy-containing coal out there. And Solid Energy, the government department, wants to turn it into fertilizers, wants to turn it into diesel. So she wants to stop that because what she says is we need to keep coal in the hole to avert climate change.
Well, like we're kind of climate deniers on the show, so we do have robust debates on this topic fairly often. And a friend of mine, he works for Greenpeace, and one thing that he's noticed is that Greenpeace has sort of become not about any local issues anymore. He's been a member for a long time, and it used to be Hamilton Greenpeace, and they had Hamilton projects, things like that, but now it's being amalgamated into sort of the global Greenpeace movement, and now it's only about climate change, and it's only about depletion of the oceans. There's no local focus anymore. What do you think about that?
Well, that's Greenpeace's decision, and I think we're blessed in New Zealand and around the world with a real diversity and a real spectrum of environmental groups. And I think it's quite good, actually, to have local groups that aren't run out of overseas country like Greenpeace. And you have those big international NGOs to really campaign at the international level. So I think if we only had one environmental group and they weren't working locally, that would be bad. But the fact is we've got tons, and it's good that we've got the big groups and the small groups. I believe in climate change. I look at the science. I think it's happening. I'm really worried about it for the future of my kids. So I think it's good that you do have those international groups, because ultimately the solution is going to be an international one.
Mm. And in terms of a debate on climate change, I mean, one thing that we notice very much on this show is that they're basically any sort of debate that tries to be gotten into, people are demonized as working for the oil companies or being conspiracy theorists or things like this. And we believe that not having debate or walking away from it is extremely unhealthy for a free society.
Oh, well, I agree with you, and that's something I never do. I mean, I like to have my arguments based on the facts, based on the science, and when it comes to climate change, I really feel comfortable those are on the side of anthropogenic climate change.
Okay. Yeah, Gareth, it's Will here. Yeah, I'm Vinny's co-host. I mean, we do have this debate quite often, and it often gets mischaracterized as we don't care for the environment, when nothing could be further from the truth. As you know, I see your favourite animal there's a tuatara. I actually have a dock permit to keep absolutely protected species. Got a couple of Auckland greens and Northland green geckos and stuff. But you know, on the subject of climate change, I think it's been used, even if the science is on your side of the debate, I think it's been used as a grab. Do you not see that? As a political grab for taxation, firstly, for a private bank consortium?
I think that's farther from the truth as it could be. I mean, in New Zealand, we've got a weak as emissions trading scheme, which is essentially just a wealth transfer from taxpayers to the rich companies, often our biggest polluters, like Solid Energy, like Fonterra.
Does that money go specifically?
Well, it's an interesting question because it is quite a big money go-round, but ultimately New Zealand, because our emissions have increased so much, has to purchase these offshore carbon credits. With the emissions trading scheme, the money, essentially half the cost of those credits, are being subsidised to our polluters in New Zealand. So, you know, it's not a tax grab by the government to the people. In fact, what we've got is a wealth transfer from the government to some of our biggest corporates.
If we're buying these carbon credits, who is our country buying them off?
Actually, no one... there's been a few small-scale transactions, but the Kyoto period doesn't actually finish until 2012, so at the moment it's still theoretical. Some companies use clean development mechanisms, which are going to developing nations.
Yeah, this is our whole point. It's been bought. These credits have been bought off a private bank consortium.
I mean, I imagine a lot of your concerns about carbon trading myself, and I believe it's actually an excuse for not actually acting, but I don't think the fact that we've got carbon trading or there's been some bad practices in any cases reduces the evidence for human-induced climate change.
Humans' contribution to CO2 as a percentage of total CO2 in the atmosphere, what do you see the figure as?
What was that question again, I'm sorry?
The human component of CO2 that we contribute to the atmosphere as humans on a global scale per annum, in relation to evaporation from the ocean or decaying of flora and fauna. I mean, what do you see the amount that humans contribute to that total?
Well, I know we're changing the component of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that proportion. You know, we're almost at 400 parts per million. Scientists like James Hansen say we should be at 350 parts per million, which is quite a bit of a sequestration we need to encourage. But the fact is, guys, I mean, I don't want to get into a debate about climate change. I'm comfortable with the science. The New Zealand government is, the vast bulk of world governments are, and I'm trying my best in Parliament to reduce those emissions because I care about my kids' future.
Well, I do too. I just think that Banks, Thomas Jefferson said, banks are more dangerous than standing armies. And I think they're certainly more dangerous than this climate change threat, because it's there's a lot of scientists, actually the majority of scientists globally now, are not on the side of the IPCC. And so I think...
That's news to me.
Well, CO2 only makes up 0.038% of the atmosphere, so the majority of greenhouse gas, over 99%, is water vapor. And then of that 0.038%, man contributes about 3%, like 6.6 gigatons compared to over 150 gigatons of CO2 from the oceans. The evaporation from the oceans is largely driven by the sun. And so, therefore, slight changes in solar activity, as have been analogued by NASA, would account for more variation in CO2 evaporation from the ocean than man existing or not. Like there's a huge factor there that comes from oceans and decaying flora and and CO2 is a building block of life. Don't you think it's? What do you think of Barack Obama calling it a toxic poison? When it's one part of the, oxygen, air, water, light, and CO2 are the four essential building blocks of life on this planet.
Hey, well, like I said, I don't really want to get into a debate on the science of climate change. I'm going to have to shoot off in a minute. Is there anything else you want to chat about?
We'd also like to talk about other environmental issues, like, for example, pollution in the general environment, particularly in regards to industrial wastes. One thing that I'm really particularly concerned about is fluoride in the water supply. Big industrial waste. It's classified as toxic waste by the EPA in the United States, and we put it in our water because it's good for our teeth. I'd like to know your perspective on that.
I don't actually have a big perspective. I haven't really looked at the facts on it. I know we've got a big debate happening within our party at the moment. Some people on one side of the debate say we need it for our dental protection, and other people sort of outline the potential risks. So I haven't made up my mind what I think about fluoride yet.
It comes from the smelting industry, and it's not actually allowed to be dumped into the to the oceans. And so instead it's been added to water supplies, and, of course, it finds its way into our oceans anyway.
Yeah, I know, it's mad.
I mean, I think the average European, they did a study and found there's 10,000 different chemical compounds within them, because there's so many of these industrial chemicals literally just being put into our environment. But I get what you're saying about fluoride. We're actually putting it into the human food chain.
Yeah. And not to mention, then it makes its way back into the environment after it goes down the drain anyway. So it's like it's almost as if we're paying companies to take their toxic waste and dump it for them. You know, it seems really mad to me. And also the statistics for the arguments for fluoridation don't stack up either. Fluoridation, for example, in the European Union is illegal. And they have similar, if not virtually, there's no discernible difference between dental quality in the EU as the United States, where approximately, 64% of municipalities are fluoridated, and there's no discernible difference.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are the things that are very much kept out of these debates. I mean, I asked, what was his name? The health minister for national, I forget his name, Tony...
Tony Ryle?
Yeah. I asked him why they're putting fluoride into our water, because fluoride is the main binding agent in two things, Prozac and 1080.
Right, wow.
So I said, why are you putting this in our water supply? And he says, well, I wasn't aware of that. And I say, well, now that you are aware that you're dumping Prozac and rat poison into our water supplies, are you going to do anything about it? I sent him a document written by the main dental advocate in New Zealand about this about water fluoridation, who recused himself and said, I was basically paid to lie to the New Zealand public to tell them that fluoride was good for them. And then he mapped out all in detail all these lies he told and how dangerous it really is. It causes a whole bunch of bone cancers. It reduces the IQ. There's a whole myriad of different implications. And the problem with it is, if any political person who really loved their country and was extremely strong enough to stand up and really talk about the facts on this issue, they would be demonized, and they would probably wind up losing their careers, as this man did. And I asked the minister, it would take somebody who's really patriotic, who loves his country and loves his people, to do this. So he passed it on to the Assistant Minister of Health, Peter Dunn.
Hey, guys, so I'd love to chat about this further. I thought we were just doing a short interview, but I need to shoot off. But I'd love to chat again when I've got a bit more time. So, wicked, have a great day.
All right, thanks very
okay.
much.
Okay, cheers, Gareth.
Gareth Hughes, ladies and gentlemen, from the Green Party in New Zealand. Thanks for coming on with us, mate. All right.
Okay, that was interesting, wasn't it? You bring up climate change, and you know we've got to go. Sorry, I didn't come here for a debate.
Oh no, no, no. He did in fact have to leave in general. But
no, it's but just what that you could see that the there was no counter to any sort of argument that I put forth. It's just I'm comfortable. It's like yeah, you know, I could be comfortable swimming in crap too. it really gets me though when MPs can't answer questions of the citizens they're supposedly serving. Mm. So here I am, a citizen, you know, and we just get told, "Well, I didn't come here for debate, and I'm comfortable." It will. The audience needs to be comfortable with things we're paying for here. 3 cents a litre on gas, we need to be comfortable. We need to be more than comfortable.
I'm sort of confused here, though, Will, because didn't he say he's happy to debate the facts about climate change at the start of the interview?
He did, but then he didn't want to. And it wasn't due to time. It's just they couldn't even just answer a simple one line there about man-made contribution. Well, I'm not letting these people off the hook, Vinny. I mean, we can make excuses for them another time, another day, and it'd be good to have Gareth back on, really, because I think he means well. I think he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that he was openly willing to listen about the fluoride issue, you know, gives me a lot of faith, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's only because it's an environmental issue, I suppose. But then who cares if it goes into the skeletal systems of children, you know. That doesn't really matter to them, does it?
Well, let's hope he has a safe trip, first of all. We certainly don't want his plane to be hijacked by terrorists or the New Zealand Defence Force, for that matter.
Don't worry, there's a big government cushion keeping us all safe at the moment.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel warm and fuzzy, Vinny, when we know that the government just sanitises the dangerous reality out there and all the big bad guys are kept away?
Oh, yeah.
Except for the bigger bad guys who you pay your taxes to. Don't talk about them, though. Don't talk about the real Giuseppe Mazzinis out there.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. It's just not on, really, is it?
I mean, you know, I hope he enjoys the Masonic Halls back on February the 8th and can talk about some of these issues within the confines of the checkered floors. And, yeah, I mean, maybe one day we'll have a population in New Zealand that really holds these guys to the wall and says, either you tell us straight up, where's the money going? Why are we paying a carbon tax? Why are we having fluoride and, you know, put into our skeletal systems? Frankly, rather than saying they've got to go or speak to my advisor or, you know, I'm in a hurry right now, I've got to go and have dinner at the Northern Club. I mean, how many excuses have you heard, Vinny?
I've lost count. You know, it's either you're at a climate change march talking about climate change and it's not the appropriate place for it. or send me a letter because I don't have enough time to talk about it. You know, and it's just this disparity between questions and answers. You can ask all the questions you want, but getting answers is like finding hen's teeth. You know, and that's what I really want. I don't necessarily want to be able to ask the questions so much as I do want to be able to hear the answers. And this is the difficulty when you're dealing with frauds and people in Parliament and all these other people who've got, well, basically they're held accountable to the words of their voice much more than any individual's opinion would be, for example. And so there's certain things that they cannot say. There's certain things that they cannot do because of their positions. This is why I choose to most of the time bring on activists onto this show, because they have. Well,
a politician should be able to speak his mind totally. That's what we elect them to do. That's what the liberty we grant them, because we do actually grant them freedoms. They are servants, yeah. Not the other way around.
And as soon as Honi Harawira says something bad about the Māori Party, oh, we've got to demonize them. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we will be right back momentarily.
About there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about history repeating. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, and proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Speaking of environmental challenges, you'll love this one. Genetically modified oil-eating bacteria, which Kevin Costner, the postman, is responsible for, creating dangerous mutant organisms in the Gulf. Even the most creative science fiction movie could not have concocted the reality of what is taking place both in the Gulf of Mexico and around the world right now. Genetically modified oil-eating bacteria introduced to the Gulf as part of the oil disaster's remediation efforts is reportedly causing the emergence of various other mutant bacteria, as well as increasingly severe harm to humans and the environment. Reports now reveal that scientists of BP knew of a super bacteria that was programmed to eat oil twice as fast as the normal and set loose in the Gulf. Mike Utzler, chief operating officer of BP's Gulf Coast Restoration, publicly told BBC reporters that there is a new form of microbiology that is attacking the oil plume and using it as a food source. Now, I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but I disagree with genetically modifying pretty much anything. Unless it's just kept confined in the lab, all right? You ever see those movies where they make some description of really, really effed up organism and then it comes out and it starts playing havoc with everything? Where do you think the movies get their inspiration from? It's because it happens all the freaking time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they might not be, 30-foot tall reptoid humanoid things, but out of some, I don't know, David Icke novel. No, but seriously, just gene inserts in tomatoes that can move on the chain and all sorts of stuff happens, generally because of unstable inserts from what I've read. I'm no expert, just read the science, as our previous guest said. I think we're still getting over the fact we had our first politician on. Is that all right, Vinny?
No. We've had Keith Locke and Sue Bradford on.
Yeah, no, we've had that. Yeah, no, we have had a couple of other criminals. I mean politicians.
That must have been a Freudian slip there, bro.
No, but I think we're shaken, not stirred, and he was rather stirred. Apparently, he hung up on us, folks. He hung up on our on Adam, our board op here. Very swiftly exited. I mean, how could we compare that? What would that be called in climate change terms? Like a hot air balloon out of Al Gore's house or something? Just straight up the chimney. He was out of here.
Well, he did have a flight to catch, and we were, in fact, told before we brought him back from the second break that he had to, in fact, leave the house to go on a flight, and I knew that before he came on. So I would assume that he just basically hung up the phone because he actually had to leave the house to go to a flight.
I hope, as a responsible climate changer, he's counting his air miles there and that the plane's run on biofuel, as the new 77s from Boeing do.
Well, that's just cynical, Will.
I hope it's entirely made of composites.
And it's also made of food. And that's the interesting thing, right? You use food as fuel, and instead of fueling human bodies, now we've got massive food shortages. According to a report from France and verified by Russian intelligence, President Barack Hochobarry and French President Sarkozy agreed recently to form a joint US-European military force to deal with alleged coming food riots this spring. There have already been food riots in Algeria and Tunisia. A lot of people thought that the Tunisian thing was about some particular guy who got burnt and then died after being approached by a police officer and told that he couldn't sell things on the street. Yep, that's why the entire country rioted, right? And based on the last few months of disasters around the world, and there have been quite a few, and they're big, really, really huge-scale disasters, and virtually every single one of them, I've heard people theorize that HAARP has been involved. But I don't know.
Well, of course we don't know. We don't know anything to do with HAARP. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, these events have basically damaged all the staples, you know, like grain, soy, wheat, corn, citrus fruits. There have been fires, floods, tornadoes, blizzards, heat waves, cold waves, mass animal deaths, and oil spillages. And the weather
climate change.
And, you know, the weather forecast for the remainder. Well, in fact, the oil cano coming out of the Gulf of Mexico, supposedly all the oil got into the Gulf Stream and shut it down, all right? And that is the reason why the Northern Hemisphere is now experiencing some of the was experiencing. I'm not sure if it's still blisteringly cold over there, or rather the news has just stopped reporting on it because it's no longer news. It's just freezing under inches and inches and inches of snow and ice. Now, the weather forecasters for the remainder of the year also look pretty bleak, with more storms predicted. We've just had some really rough weather here in New Zealand as well, and scientists have recently suggested a model of a superstorm in California that would last more than 40 days and flood much of the state. Rains and hurricane-force winds will delay recovery, and people will lose their homes by the millions. The last time this happened in California was 1861. The model was hypothetical and did not even take into account the possible quakes and tsunamis that will occur. The crops that were listed as being in danger are bad for you anyway. Because if you stick with local organic farms for your food and grow your own in your backyard or hothouses, you should not have a problem, as mentioned several times on this show.
I thought that's quite commonplace in France too. That's why I thought they wouldn't have such a problem. But you know, maybe Sarkozy's got something up his sleeve there. Get a few baguettes flying in France later this year. But then it's weather wars in general, isn't it, Vinny? That's all this is about.
Yeah.
This is totally classified for the current activities anyway. So people speculate whether it's HAARP or whether it's just seeding, or
and there's chemtrails as well. You know, there are a whole lot of weather modification programs that are going on as we speak, and it does.
There are US patents, but for people who don't think this exists, there are US patents. I haven't got the patent numbers right with me at the moment for solutions to sea clouds. US patents. I mean, they've been out since the 60s.
And you know, it's undeniable when you look at the evidence, right? And the in my field, in our field of expertise, rather, Will, we interview people about this all the time. In fact, we've had chemtrail researchers and experts on the show. We've had climate change experts on the show who deny that it's all due to human activity, and that all this weather is just going absolutely haywire. Now, we've had things like the jet stream. In Pakistan, not too long ago, they had these enormous floods. Simultaneously, in Russia, they had enormous forest fires. And what the media wasn't reporting on is the fact that the jet stream, which supplied all their general wind currents around that particular region, shut down. WTF is going on here? There's something extremely, extremely wrong. And you have to be very, very conscious of this, ladies and gentlemen. You need to get yourself some a secure food supply. According to Lindsay Williams, not only is the oil going to go up to $200 a barrel, but also food prices are going to skyrocket. And this article that we just read out here from Guerrilla Media confirms that the governments are understanding this as well. He says that there will be plenty of food on the shelves, but you just won't be able to afford it. Crime's going to go up. I can bet you, and it'll be used as a pretext to crank down on everybody with a fabulous police state mechanism, I'm betting. Because they wouldn't let a good crisis go to waste, would they? Oh, no. No. We need to make sure everything that comes under government control. Fabulous New World Order death squads will roam the streets and kill all these savages that are trying to feed their families. Oh, yes. I love doing my evil laugh. I was going, makes me feel good. Oh, the tyranny. You know, and I don't know. Maybe I'm not taking it seriously enough. Well, maybe if I was taking it seriously enough, I'd be going friggin' nuts.
Well, what we're talking about with James before was people being afraid to air their opinions in the sphere of politics. And, you know, as we were going to, before we left the break to have our climate change MP on, Vinny was saying, well, maybe we should steer away from those subjects. And I just think, well, no, this is exactly it. It all needs to be out on the table, all needs to be out in the open, don't you think? I mean, we need to, these guys are our elected officials, you know? I mean, he needs to be – it's not good enough to say, oh, I don't know about that. If you don't know about it, get the hell out of Parliament. Don't call yourself an expert on that issue. That's in his biography. Climate change is one of his areas of expertise, along with transport. Okay, if you don't know the subject backwards, if you don't know all the climate denier Christopher Monckton arguments against you, then get the hell out of there. But see, they don't have to know it because they don't have any debate. They don't have to be prepared for it. They've got all these layers. They've got receptionists and they've got all sorts of personnel, and then they've got all their smear campaigns to prevent them from even having to know anything.
And speaking of things kind of fitting in there on the subject of food shortages, isn't it strange, this is from Guerrilla Media, that FEMA wants to buy 140 million packaged meals with a shelf life of only 36 months for a particular specific disaster scenario. FEMA procures and stores prepackaged commercial meals to support readiness capability for immediate distribution to disaster survivors routinely. The purpose of this request for information is to identify sources of supply for meals in support of disaster relief efforts based on a catastrophic disaster event within the New Madrid fault system for a survivor population of 7 million to be utilized for the sustainment of life during a 10-day period of operations. FEMA is considering the following specifications. Serving size is 12 ounces, about 1,200 calories per meal. Protein, about 36 grams, no trans fats, 13 grams of saturated fat, 47 grams of total fat, and 800 milligrams of sodium. Now, requested menus to include snacks, i.e. fruit mix, candy, chocolate, peanut butter squeezers, drink mix, condiments, and utensils. All meal kits must have 36 months of remaining shelf life upon delivery. Packaging should be environmentally friendly. Now, I'm kind of, you know, there's all these different scenarios, right? And they all sort of lock in, you know, when you try to think about it, connecting the dots. there is going to be, and I'm not the only one who thinks this. In fact, I'm kind of going out on a limb here. There's going to be a heck of a lot of turmoil this year. We also have another person in the United States who predicted the collapse of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all of that, saying that the US dollar is going to be dumped as the world reserves currency this year, as Russia and China have already indicated, which is going to destroy the United States in terms of how you trade and in terms of current economic operations. How you trade is how you survive. You know, there's some really heavy stuff going down, man. And I really am concerned, you know. On this show, it's the lighter side of genocide, but this ain't funny. This is deadly freaking serious. And, you know, groups like Greenpeace, they're not going out and organizing community groups to create community gardens. No. Even in Hamilton, if you do want a community garden, you go to the council and say, hey, can we use this? And they say, no, we're going to build a gym there in like 5 years. And they're like, well, why don't you tear up the garden in 5 years' time? And they say, oh, it's not the proper zoning. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back. Final segment coming up. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, the sexualization of children, switching gears here a little bit in this final segment, you know, we want to talk about something that's very nice and wholesome. This is from the Daily Mail. Gay messages built into school maths lessons for children as young as 4. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe I'm just some description of, crazed conservative, but I don't think that you should be teaching children at all about sex.
It's mental. This is, as it goes on to say, as part of a government-backed drive to, quote, celebrate the gay community, maths problems could be introduced that involve gay characters. Then there's, you know, books with two male penguins at a New York Central Park Zoo raising a chick. You know, of course, those penguins are going to die due to climate change. That's the other side of it. it's just mental. And it's pushed on the idea, on the premise that it's teaching children inclusiveness, that lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender people are part of the community too, and the children need to embrace that ideology and accept that, and the government's... Why does the government have an agenda to do that, though? Why? I mean, why does a 4-year-old need to be implanted with sexual imagery whatsoever or ideology whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, they don't even need to learn about about heterosexuality at age 4,
do they?
I know why,
but it should get other people thinking. I could tell you why, but it should get other people thinking, other people who are open-minded to this such lifestyles. I mean, and then it goes on to talk about how these people are essentially different. What makes you different? What makes you not human? What makes you a different species because of your sexual preference or distortions due to chemical imbalance thanks to pesticides in food and water.
Yeah, and I mean, what we were saying earlier, bro, is that a lot of these things that are discussing human issues, they're actually discussing them from an anti-human perspective, from a separation model, you know? You've got to separate these people. They're not part of us, but we've got to be accepting of them, even though they're different. It's like, well, they're not really any different. I mean, come on. Seriously, we're all human beings. We all have blood coursing through our veins. What the heck is the real discernible difference?
But anyway, in the tightest times where the British government's cutting back on everything, cutting back on subsidies for university education, tertiary education, they're now backing this with grants across primary schools. And it's going to be launched in February, the start of LGBT, Lesbian, Gay, Bi, and Trans History Month. Okay? And as part of History Month, they're promoting awareness of prominent gay figures, such as Hadrian from Rome, because they're such a beautiful example of a functioning society of hedonism. I love it. Sicko. Oh, freaks. Yeah. I mean, they're just... Oh, man. And you just can't have any opinion, because otherwise you're just over-opinionated, homophobic, yada, yada, yada.
Well, see, it seems very interesting, doesn't it, Will, that a whole bunch of these debates, there's all these labels that get put on you if you don't want to be part of them, right? You know, if you don't agree with climate change, you're a climate denier. If you don't agree with homosexuality, you're homophobic. It's like these are just these word associations, right, that take away from any debate, any moral judgment or anything like that. And I don't think the government should be able to make any description of moral judgment, because after
but
all,
they are.
They're totally immoral in their very fabric anyway. I mean, take the Holy Greek case, for example. There's a guy who put up on his website the names of 1,000 or something like that. It was 300, I think, members of parliament who are known pedophiles, 150 of which are still in Parliament.
Yeah, take the Dunblane massacre. they got secret society handprints all over them. But, I mean, this is just wrong, though. This is out in the open government manipulation of your children's minds, and then if you disagree with it, see, they set the ball in motion. Always. They always set the agenda. They always frame the debate. And then you, if you disagree with it, you're the weirdo then. See that? They get everyone's back up to you. It's a typical, I'm trying to think of the psychological term for this, but...
Sociopath.
Like the specific term for that tactic. But, I mean, it just works on people.
Ad hominem?
Time and time and time and time. No, it's not ad hominem, but the way they just frame a debate and then they say, look, oh, you're anti-gay. Oh, you're anti-climate change. Oh, you're anti-war on terror. Oh. I mean, you're anti-fluoride, you're anti-bank, you're anti-government. No, I'm just anti-bunch of scum freaks taking the power, taking the levers of power, taking our decision-making process over our own lives away from us, and then dividing and conquering us and getting your way all the time. You always get your way, these freaks.
Yeah.
You Mason scum. You, I mean, totally, man. Like, that's well, all they know, are.
And this is the thing.
They want
they're anti-human.
I'll tell you why. The Masons, this is the secret. The Masons believe that there is no male and female. Okay? And that's what that's about, if you want to research that line.
It's all friggin' esoteric, man. There's so much information out there, so many complex things. It's very, very difficult, and it does take a while, but you can understand how the world is really run if you choose to spend the time cruising through the information, as people like myself, Will, and most of the guests that we have on
the show. Just want to shout out quickly to Ahmed in Tunisia and to... Mark Wingate and to Claire Swinney and to Jade and all the great followers of the show. And cheers. We'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, man. I love having listeners who interact with us, man. It's just so freaking awesome. And also Agape as well and Satori of TrueBook.org, ladies and gentlemen, and James Bryant, who wants to make a donation to the show. This is so nice. And, you know, this is the thing. We're doing the show because, well, we want to do something about what's wrong with society. We're not going to sit back and do nothing. We'd rather do something than nothing at all. And we'll be back tomorrow.